Boy, over the years on the Reduced Shakespeare Comedy Podcast, you have heard us talk about Second City so many times. I'm only a second citizen at best by marriage, but I've worked with so many Second City alumni, and Second City has transformed, I think it's fair to say, over the past 50 years, the kind of comedy that we see worldwide, globally. It's become an institution not only here in Chicago and around the world, and I'm finally doing an interview with the man, let's just say the man who is responsible for all of it. Shall we, Kelly Leonard?
No, I'm not responsible for all of it. I'm caretaking the modern version of Second City at this point.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or MP3 player. I'm Austin Titchener, one third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, number 399, The Second City. Second City alumni are some of the most recognizable comedy names from the last half century. Alan Arkin, Alan Alda, Mike Nichols, Joan Rivers, Harold Ramis, Bill Murray, Gilda Radner, John Belushi, Dan Aykroyd, George Wendt, Adam McKay, David Koechner, Steve Carell, Tina Fey, and Stephen Colbert, to name only a very few. Not to mention the Reduced Shakespeare Company alumni that have also performed on the Second City main stages, like Dee Ryan, David Rozowski, Rachel Hamilton, Kiff VandenHeuvel, and the current and alumni RSC members who also studied at Second City, like Matt Croak, Tim Schuneman, Dominic Conti, Brent Tubbs, and Michael Faulkner. Since we're about to perform the European premiere of our ninth stage show, The Complete History of Comedy Abridged, it seemed the perfect time to delve into the complete history of the Second City with its executive vice president and president of Second City Theatricals, Kelly Leonard. Can you give us the reduced version of the history of Second City?
Yeah. So in 1959, when Second City opened, comedy prior to that was primarily mother-in-law jokes. You know, there was vaudeville, and there was Fred Allen, there was, you know, radio. But when we opened, and it wasn't just us, you could see it on the stand-up scene with Woody Allen and Mort Saul and Dick Gregory, but then Second City opened, and it was comedy that was about politics, and it was comedy that was about sex, and comedy that was about religion. It was satiric, and that was new. We opened December 16th, 1959, and we were immediately a hit, but very much sort of University of Chicago intelligentsia.
Well, that's right, because it's a college town. We forget that Chicago was a college town, and back then it was even more so.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the pictures back then, and everyone was smoking in the theater and had suits and, you know, dark rimmed glasses, and the ladies wearing cocktail dresses. And, you know, the show started at 9 on the weekday. That's what it did. And it was a scene. And so you had people around here like Mike Nichols and Elaine May, Alan Arkin, Barbara Harris, Severn Darden, and then Fred Willard, and Robert Klein, you know, so some amazing, amazing folks. And then leap to 1969, and it evolves once again. And it evolves with a show called The Next Generation. So we went from the suits and the short hair to John Belushi's long hair and blue jeans, and Harold Ramis and Joe Flaherty. And then a new kind of comedy evolved. So essentially, you look at Second City from the beginning to right now, and we're developing the next generation of comic voices, and that those changes are happening here, and then they go national.
Right.
So after
even back in the day, right? Yeah. Even in the 60s.
Yeah, absolutely. So the next generation leads to from 69 to then you look at the mid-70s, and you've got Saturday Night Live and SCTV. So Saturday Night Live being made up of Second City alums, Gilda Radner, Bill Murray, John Belushi, Dan Aykroyd, and then our own show, SCTV, in response with John Candy, Martin Short, so many great people, and Gilda, of course, in Saturday Night Live. And then you go to the 80s. And the 80s are weird, because there you've got Jim Belushi, and you've got George Wendt, you've got Shelley Long. So the influence is still there as it extends to properties outside of Second City, like Cheers, really important shows. But comedy was finding itself again. Stand-up became huge. We all remember the mid-80s, mm-hmm. you know, stand-up boom. And I started working here in 1988 as a dishwasher when Mike Myers was on stage and Bonnie Hunt was on stage. Jane Lynch was on stage. And it was ready for an evolution that we didn't know when or how that was going to happen. started producing in 1992, and I was very lucky to have in my first cast Stephen Colbert, Amy Sedaris, Steve Carell, Paul Dinello. Those guys wanted to do very interesting work, and were certainly doing it, but weren't necessarily part of the revolution that was going to come, which did, right, in 1995 with a show called Pinata Full of Bees, that Scott Adsit and Adam McKay and Tom Giannis, among others, were a part of. And that really blew open the form of the Second City, introduced sort of long-form improvisation into the Second City mold. The content was radical. There was a theme to the show, which was that Noam Chomsky had taken over the teaching of a grade school class, teaching them about the real America. And
so, Adam.
Yeah. And while and it was a massive hit with critics and with the community, and far less so with the audience. Mm. Probably the least successful main stage show we've ever done.
Interesting.
But at Second City, we
and yet the one that everybody talks about, continue, yeah, in the community. Yeah.
Well, I think importantly, our owner, Andrew Alexander, has said, lead the business as you would being an improviser and a good improviser. So that means that sometimes you have to risk and fail. And that show succeeded on one level, failed on another level, but that failure led to amazing riches because the shows after that, Citizen Gates and Paradigm Lost, were both structurally and content-wise big hits with the community and critics, but then the audiences loved them as well. Mick Napier directed, mm-hmm, both of those. Mm-hmm. Tina Fey was in both of those. So it's been, I've now been at Second City for 25 years, and you know, from where I sit today, it's really a lot about letting, you know, you hire really good talent, get out of their way, and then watch as the comic world changes.
Well, and I was joking before that you're responsible, but isn't it really kind of almost fair to say that you did bring in some of the long-form improv ideas that were flourishing in other parts of Chicago at the Annoyance Theater and at Improv Olympic, now the I.O.?
Sure.
Isn't that fair?
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I was a fan of a lot of the work going on around the theater community, and so certainly we hired a bunch of those long-form improvisers. We created a show called Lois Kaz, which was very successful, Second City's first long-form, yep, improvisational show, and you know, got Mick to return to Second City, and he had left a few years earlier, but then also started seeking out other voices. I remember Stephen Colbert recommended a director, Dexter Bullard, who has gone on to, he formed Plasticine, a physical theater company, because I very much wanted the work to become more physical. And we're always, you know, there's such a rich theatrical community to draw from, both in the improv world, but then the straight theater world. And so we're continually looking outside to help influence the work that's going on inside.
And yet, you don't seem to be chasing trends. If anything, you're establishing them, but you're establishing them by not. Well, this is what I love about Chicago. It's not, it's competitive, but in a healthy way, and everybody supports everybody else. So I don't feel like Second City is out to crush the rest of Chicago. In fact, you embrace all of the various theatrical styles and talent that the city has to offer.
Yeah, I mean, that's an improv thing, right?
Right.
You know, it's an ensemble-based community, and that's spread across. I mean, Steppenwolf is an ensemble. Looking Glass is an ensemble. Second City is an ensemble. Annoyance is an ensemble. I.O. is all about ensemble. We're different than New York. We're different than L.A. The schools don't fight. I mean, we get crabby with each other.
Yes.
That happens, which is fine. But, you know, we go to each other's openings. We share talent. I think almost everyone trains at all the schools and performs on all the stages. Yeah. Yes, we have the biggest platform, but that's because we're a first.
Mm-hmm.
And because we have those roots. That's fine. We're not trying to own the talent, but we're very proud that they, you know, worked here. And I think we can share that as a community, and it makes it stronger. And just look at what's gone on this, you know, in the past few months. So Annoyance opens a big new shiny home.
Yeah.
I.O. is moving just down the street here in a big home. And then we've just announced that we are adding 25,000 square feet, old movie theaters that were in Piper's Alley, for all new classrooms, theaters, and a bar. So yeah, we're all growing.
That's the thing that kind of blows my mind, that I thought you already had taken over all these movie theaters here in Piper's Alley, and yet you haven't, and you're about to expand 25,000 square feet, which more, if I'm reading the figures right, more than doubles your foot.
The training center.
Just the training center. So,
okay.
So we're 75,000 square feet. Now,
wow.
with this new training center. So the training center before was around 20,000 square feet. We're adding 25. So the school is a big part of what this theater is now, and it's well beyond training people to get up on the stage. The vast majority of the people who are studying with us are not doing it to get to Saturday Night Live. They're doing it because they think improvisation is something that can help them in their life and their work. So we're leading workshops with social anxiety disorder folks, and with people suffering from Parkinson's, and with kids who are on the spectrum. And we do summer camps, and we do stuff with seniors. So anyone who does this work will say this, that improv is good for you. It teaches you to be in the moment. It is all about allowing for failure and risk. It's about making your partner look good. All these things can be applied to your home life and your work life to make you better at both. You know, the thing is, in business school, they don't teach you this stuff. No. And yet, what would be the number one thing in business? Well, it's probably reading a room. Can you read a room?
Yeah.
That's what improv teaches you, to assess the room and then respond in kind, to not just listen to the words the person is saying, but look about how their physicality is maybe sending a message that their words are not sending. That's great theater when you see it on there. It's also great theater when you see it, you know, in an office when you're really trying to get to truth.
Hi, I'm Rachel Dratch, and you're listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast.
Where can you RSC the RSC? We land in Edinburgh, Scotland this week for the European premiere of The Complete History of Comedy Abridged at the Pleasance Theatre at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival from July 30th to August 25th. And in honor of the 30th birthday of the Pleasance, we'll also be doing 9 performances of the show that started it all, The Complete Works of William Shakespeare Abridged, revised from August 17th to the 25th. As always, the very best way to stay up to date about all of our worldwide performance dates is to sign up for the Reduced Reader, our email newsletter. Go to ReduceShakespeare.com and click on the link to subscribe and check out our touring page for specific box office, venue, and ticket information.
The increasing size of the classrooms shows exactly what you're saying. There's a demand for people who want to take these classes. And so the classes exist, your shows, your resident companies now, the main stage and the ETC stage. Do you have companies in other cities now as well?
The only, Toronto has a resident company, and they're thriving right now. We have a school in Los Angeles, but not a resident company, a small stage that does shows with alumni and students and that sort of thing. No, I remember when I first started working here, there are matchbooks that said coming soon, Second City Boston, Second City Dallas, all this list of cities. Right. And, you know, we did some of that, and we were in Detroit for 10 years, Las Vegas for 7 years, Cleveland for 18 months. And the story was the same there. We found some great talent, we did some good work, and we did some bad work, but ultimately, it was hard, and it was hard to manage quality. And, you know, the talent we did get, which was significant in a place like Detroit, ended up being a drain on all our sort of management systems. And so we came up with what turned out to be a better idea, which is what Second City does now is drop into cities for 6 weeks, 8 weeks, and we create reviews with regional theaters that are about the city, and then we leave.
Yeah.
and we're paid for what we do.
Yes.
And we don't have, we don't have to, you know, raise a bunch of money, and we don't have to, you know, live down there. But we go in, we experience the city, and then we've created a nice partner that we've got regionally to then bring them other kinds of shows.
Yes.
So in addition to all the school here and the stages here, we have a very robust touring and theatricals world. So we have 3 full-time touring companies that are playing performing arts centers and colleges. We're on 6 Norwegian cruise line ships full-time with ensembles there. And then we're creating all kinds of different kinds of theatrical shows, musicals, plays, one-man shows that we're taking to regional theaters and commercial theaters across the country. So, you know, we're basically developing a lot of original content with our talent and bringing that to the world. So it's fun and it's exciting and sometimes it's dangerous and sometimes it doesn't work.
Well, and that's the thing you're focused on more now, is creating this new work.
Yeah, so we had a really wonderful partnership with Lyric Opera, where we created a show called The Second City Guide to Opera. That led to the show we're developing right now with Hubbard Street Dance, where we're creating a hybrid comedy dance show that will debut in the fall here in Chicago. And then our Toronto folks made a deal with the Toronto Symphony. And The Second City Guide to the Symphony will be launched in November. And if that's successful, that's something we're looking to tour all over North America, working with different symphonies. So that's sort of a fine arts kind of thing that we're doing. There's two other projects that I really like that we have. One is a play that was written by Tim Sniffen and Tim Ryder called Death of a Streetcar Named Virginia Woolf, which has all those things in it. And we worked with Michael Halberstam at Writers Theater in Glencoe they provided dramaturgy, and we're really proud of that script, and that's something that we are taking out next year. And then we're developing a show with Dexter Bullard, the director I referred to earlier, and a group called the Pajama Men, who are London-based Americans, and we're going to do a two-man Three Musketeers with them. That would also go to regional theaters, but then probably tour various English-speaking markets overseas, because the Pajama Men have such a following there.
Cool. So you really are out to crush all of us.
No crushing. We're playing. And playing with others. That's the thing. I mean, improvisation teaches you how to collaborate. And so what we've discovered is we love creating these things, not in a vacuum, but with partner, whether they're partner organizations or whether they're partner individuals. That we have the most fun doing that, and I think that our partners do as well, because so often they don't get to get in on the creative act. Yeah. They're booking a play pre-written, or they're, booking another, a concert date or whatever. And we really like to, let's build this thing together. And so hopefully, the next 25 years of Second City can be creating a lot of interesting different content. But the one thing we can't forget, and Andrew, our owner, stresses us all the time, is that as big as we get, as cool as all these different things we're doing, if the work on the resident stages isn't top-notch, none of the rest of it matters. And in fact, the rest of it will fall away. And the biggest example of that to me that you can look at in history is two words: National Lampoon. And when they lost the magazine, when they lost the thing that was their main stage, the fact that they were able to make all this money on lending their name to these bad movies left them literally bankrupt. So Lampoon was as strong as Second City, if not stronger, at a certain point. But they lost what was essential. And that is the biggest cautionary tale that we look at, we don't want that to be us.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. Send us your famous alumni via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com. You can also post comments on many of our website pages, and you can post reviews of this podcast on iTunes. You can interact with other fans at our website at our Reduced Shakespeare Company Facebook fan page. You can also become a subscriber to our YouTube channel or become a twit. Follow us on Twitter @Reduced. You can find easy links to all these social networks at our website, reducedshakespeare.com. Thanks, as always, to webmaster Matt Rippey, Caught Masturbating Matthew Croak, music by John Weber and Garage Band. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to Marcus Churchill. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to Second City and Saturday Night Live alum Rachel Dratch. And thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 399/1197 of the Reduced Shakespeare Company. See you next week for our 400th episode of the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, coming to you live from a Scottish pub or two.
And I'll record 400 shows, and I'll record 400.
This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to ReduceShakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.
So much less.